Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
Talking of off the chain good, she doesn't know how to be anything else. Who might that be, Vassos?
Whether she's starring on your telly or the West End stage, our next guest is guaranteed great. She's the fully fledged national treasure who now stars in a new musical opening night at London's Gielgud Theatre until July. And you know it's going to be a good morning when we share it with Sheridan Smith!
We love you, Sheridan.
Oh, I love you. That's such a nice welcome.
It's time to feel good about Gielgud.
Oh, thanks for having me back. I love it here.
Sheridan, anytime, babe. Opening night at London's Gielgud Theatre until Saturday, July 27th. Openingnightmusical.com for tickets. Tickets available now. Openingnightmusical.com. How's it been for you, Sheridan?
It's been amazing. Do you know what? It's so different to anything I've done before. Like, it's in a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do this. It's like, it's a very different musical. It's very brave, new, bold. It's never been done before. So it's not like doing a rehash of a, you know, any old musical.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was a new version of something that's been done before, but it's not.
No,
it's brand new.
It's brand new. And also, it's really different. It's not like a, you know, a jazz hands kind of singy-dancy show. It's quite a dark play. And they use cameras in it, so you can either watch it as a film, or but it's like live every night. It's like getting one take of a show, you know what I mean, every night. But it's very different, new, exciting. I'm so proud of it and the company, and to work with people of this calibre, like Eva Van Hove and Rufus Wainwright. It's like, it's just so different. And so out there, and the biggest challenge of my life. So I'm enjoying it.
The biggest challenge of your life. And let's face it, we have met a few of those along this rocky road, haven't we?
We have met a few challenges.
So what happens is, so Tilly and Felix went to see it last night, and they said, you're off the chain in this. They say you're as good as it possibly can be. And so you have the live stage action going on, and there's a big screen behind, and you're seeing things projected onto that. But it's only things that are happening live. So it's like a documentary that's being made of the performance on any night people go and see it.
Yeah, it's always live. Like, there's a bit where I go outside and that's live every night.
Right, okay. And now let's talk. Actually, let's talk about, first of all, who your character is.
Right.
What we can, as much as we can say about her situation without spoiling it for people who are going to go and see, then we need to talk about you going outside the theatre whilst the performance is on as part of the performance.
Yeah,
that's right.
I mean, it's so out there. It's brilliant.
All right, so who is she, this woman?
So I play Mercel, who's this American actress. It's like a play within a play, and she's having a bit of a nervous breakdown, to say the least. And one of the fans, her fans dies at stage door, and then that sends her into this really dark
spiral. She's already in a dark place?
Yes, at this when you first meet her.
Right.
And she hates the play that she's doing. She starts improvising and going off-piste. And it's so layered. If you want to think and be really challenged, it's the show for you. But Myrtle, she's a great character. She's kind of hanging on by her fingernails, and you never know if she's going to make opening night. So that's the kind of point.
So it has been a film, though. It's never been on stage before.
Yeah, it was a film, but it's never been on stage. And Ivo Van Hove, who directs it, and then Rufus Wainwright has written the music to it. But it's kind of, the music's interweaved with the dialogue. So it's kind of, it's just brilliant. It's just brave and bold.
So she's in a dark place anyhow.
Yeah.
She's living on her nerves. She's fed up of the place she's in.
Yeah.
She drinks too much. She doesn't get enough sleep, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And then something terrible happens.
Yes.
So it could be her redemption. It could send her into a deeper, darker, more infinite hole of, I don't know, impossibility. And this happens because she's outside the stage door one night and a fan rushes up to her.
Yeah, that's right. And the fan is killed.
Right.
So, spoilers. But that then she starts seeing this girl, you know, and then and having psychosis. And
right.
Yeah, it goes very, very, very dark.
And lots of songs interwoven.
Yeah, amazing, haunting music by Rufus Wainwright,
right.
You know. And so some people absolutely are kind of up on their feet by the end and loving it. And then other people, if they're expecting what I would usually do, which is a show where you're talking to the audience or, you know, a big kind of jazz hand show, busy show. This is more like the audience are looking in on a theatre family. So you're watching what's going on, you know. We don't really acknowledge that they're there,
wow.
Sometimes. So it's just so out there. And it's, as an actress, I just wanted to challenge myself to something new, you know.
Right. So it's being filmed.
Yeah.
So it's being filmed in the auditorium with cameras.
And the audience get filmed too, by
and
the way.
Yeah, the audience are on, yeah. They're on this sort of live documentary.
Yeah, because as people arrive, yeah. That's shown later on in the show. So everyone's on camera. So anything goes. There's no wings as well. So there's no, you know,
right.
On a theatre stage, usually, yeah. But you see everything that's going on. So
it's
the
so
band
naked.
It's naked.
See, I'm getting goosebumps. So I love, because it's punk, isn't it?
This yeah, it's so
punk
out there.
Gay. I love all this stuff. I love it all. So, no, because it's completely deconstructed.
Yeah, it is completely.
It's funny because Amy White, the premiere of Back to Black was in Leicester Square last night.
Right.
And obviously, when you're at a premiere, they have cameras outside, and to fill in the hour beforehand, you do see everybody arriving,
right.
Don't you? On the red carpet, that's projected onto the big screen inside. So it's a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did you, the Gielgud Theatre, how far away is that? I always get mixed up.
Shaftesbury Avenue. It's,
so it's not that far from Leicester Square.
No, it's not. And it's right in the middle of Soho. So
right.
Friday and Saturday nights, you can imagine when I'm
right,
outside.
So can you tell us why you go out of the theatre or not? Or do you want to keep
it? Well, yeah. So there's a scene where she's very, very drunk.
Right.
and I'm sat outside and the cameras come outside and the company come outside. So all the actors I'm working with are brilliant and they're playing like the director or the producer of this play within a play.
Right.
And they all come outside and find me slumped in Soho, drunk, and
right.
I'm crawling across the floor of Soho every night, and it's life every single day.
Oh, my goodness. And what's... there has to be security there, doesn't there?
There is security around, just because it can get a bit
chaotic. Is it close
chaotic.
To the road, or is it by the stage door, or
it's
what?
It's behind the theatre, so it's... Yeah, it's a live road, but they kind of hold it while we do this scene. But I'm covered in bruises.
And what about the weather? What about if it's pouring down with rain?
Well, they come out with brollies just because we're wearing
man.
Microphones. I know, it's bonkers. But it's never been done. I love it. I just think it's so
How
exciting.
How long does that last for, that bit?
That bit's, I don't know, it's quite short. But then once I'm in the theatre, I'm stumbling down all the stairs and then I arrive on the stage. So it's crazy.
And so do you have to... Because in the Amy film, you know,
yeah.
Which is... it's not dissimilar, is it, from a character point of view? You know,
yeah.
the trials and tribulations
I know,
that Amy...
I knew lovely Amy, so... Yeah.
Yeah. Infamously went through.
Yeah.
When your character, Myrtle, is singing...
Yeah.
Do you have to sing drunk as well?
No. There's a big song at the end that she finally has gone... I've left.
Yeah, careful with the spoilers.
Yeah,
careful
no,
with the spoilers.
Yeah, anyway... Yeah, she yeah. sobers up. but I do sing this big song at the end, and then there's like a resolution, but I won't give it all away. Come and see it if you want to
no,
challenge
that sounds
and, not
absolutely
you, I mean people.
Fascinating.
But I'm Jew as well.
And
Chris.
In between shows, especially
yeah.
matinee days, what are your matinee days?
Wednesdays and Saturdays.
Okay, openingnightmusical.com, Wednesdays and Saturday matinees. It's there until Saturday, 27th of July. And I'm hearing from Tilly and from Felix, and they
Aww.
Always tell me the truth because they have to, because then I'm going to say on the radio. And if we don't tell the truth, then people won't listen to the show. Well, they will, but they won't believe anything we say anymore, so there's no point.
Aww,
they say
you
are awesome in this.
Oh,
so
thank you. The whole company are amazing.
If you like your Sheridan Smith and you like this deconstructed punk theatre, you know, sometimes I go home from this show and I just thought, that wasn't punk enough today. I mean, we're not that punk anyway, but we're more punk than people
you're
think.
Cool. You're so cool. I think as well, the thing about theatre, I think we need new stuff like that.
Well, you have to.
You know, it's brave and bold and you can't keep doing the same thing.
No.
If you want to keep theatre alive, same as you, you've got this great show and you're cool.
But sometimes we're too smooth for our own good, I think. And yesterday I was talking to Noah, because Noah loves art. He's doing loads of art at school because he's got his O-level thing coming up.
Oh, amazing.
And we were going through Rothko yesterday. We were talking about Rothko at the weekend. And,
yeah.
You know, the reason that Rothko is so amazing is, well, loads of different reasons, but there are certain colours in Rothko paintings that you can't see unless they're combined next to each other. So
wow.
There are certain colours that the human eye can't discern unless they're a combination of colours, and then we can see that colour. And that's what Rothko does. So that's around incredible. all his shapes and different impressions, you see that you're fascinated by Rothko paintings, and that's why. Because he allows us human beings to see colours we can't otherwise see unless he mixes his palette that way.
That's incredible.
And then we got onto different paintings and different impressions and different portraits. And we went through them. I said, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? So we talked about Van Gogh's flowers.
Right.
And, you know, it's the sunflowers. And I said, what are you seeing here? He said, some sunflowers. And I said, so what do you think he's painted? You know, and the answer is, I mean, there's no right answer. It's whatever Noah thinks. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, true artists, they don't paint necessarily what you're looking at. They paint themselves looking at that.
Right.
So Van Gogh's sunflowers are a representation of how he feels. Now, I'm getting back to the theatre here.
No, I
don't want to go and see with... I'm not even going to say the names because it's not fair. But there's like 95% of the productions of the West End. I personally don't want to go and see them. Loads of other people do.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know what's going to happen. They're going to be perfect recreations of the book, the story, the
exactly.
play. It's been going on for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. It's been on in New York. It's travel. I want to see this.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know what I'm going to
get. Thank you. That's it. And with Ivo van Hove, the director, that's how he sees it as art. You just go and watch it and you take your own interpretation of it.
Yeah.
And if you like it or you don't, but you know, but that's how he works. It's exactly that. It's art.
Well, it's not like or don't like, is it even? You just sit there and you go, right, okay, bring it on.
Bring exactly.
it on. Okay, you have a little bit of a warm up. Open your chakras. Yeah?
Yes.
You sit down and you say, okay. Bring it on.
Bring it on. Exactly.
Okay, I don't care how my Sheridan Smith comes, as long as she arrives fully formed on stage, doing whatever she thinks I should be paying my hard-earned cash to go and see.
Oh, I love you, Chris.
No, seriously, I'm not joking.
I'm the best.
And you talk about the matinee. The reason I mentioned the matinee performances is because you don't allow yourself to sleep in between. Why not?
I don't, because it's such a roller coaster. It's emotionally and physically so demanding. So if I sleep, then I have to like kind of really boost myself back up to do the second show.
I think you'd need to sleep more because of
that. I just have to power through on a two-show day.
What?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's emotionally draining. So then I'll get home and cuddle Billy and sleep then.
So you know we talk about it quite a lot. So when you smile, right, your brain doesn't know the difference between if you're smiling because you're happy or you're happy because you're smiling, which is why when you're fed up, it sometimes helps to smile because it can trigger happiness.
Right.
And so the blurring of the lines of the emotion when you're doing this play, based on the fact that our brain doesn't know the difference between are we feeling something because something's happened or does something happen because we feel something? How do you survive that from an emotional point of view when you have to go to all these... especially with Myrtle.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely...
Who's not the happiest bunny in the pet shop, is she?
She's not. But I can... Do you know what? The rehearsal process was hard, finding all those emotions and living in it all day. But now the show is set, it's actually very... I use it like therapy. I cry so much on that stage. And
do you actually?
Yeah, so much. And kind of throw myself into it. And then I can leave it on the stage and go home to my son. Do you know what I mean? So in a way, it's so cathartic. I actually love it.
You should be paying them. Not true, by the way. She worked so hard in this play, it's ridiculous. Is it a play or is it a musical? Musical play.
It's a musical, but it's got the music's interwoven with the dialogue, so it's kind of, it's very clever. And
how many songs does a play have to have before it stops being a play and becomes a musical? How many songs does this have?
I don't know. Well, Rufus Wainwright's written so many brilliant songs for this.
Did you meet him?
Yeah, he was there for all three rehearsals. He's so cool. I mean,
tell us about that. Tell us about
how he's amazing.
Tell us about the cool of the Wainwright.
The Wainwright is so cool. he was there for the whole of rehearsals. He messages me all the time. It's an honour to sing his songs, and he wrote them when he was in a dark place.
Right.
So each song means a lot to him. So that it is an honour to get to sing them every night, you know?
So you get home, you are exorcised of all ills.
I got to get my demons out.
Yeah. So isn't it funny? Because I dream a lot, because I wake up every 90 minutes. So I wake up in REM sleep. So I actually now know when I'm going to wake up. I think, oh, this is a dream where I'm going to wake up, and I wake up. Because you've offloaded stuff on stage every night, how are you dreaming? How are your dreams?
Oh, my dreams are weird at the minute.
Are they?
Yeah, I'm getting real weird.
So you're getting weirded out on stage, you're getting weird. You still get... I thought one of the advantages would be like you'd be able to have a better sleep.
Well, they're a little bit like anxiety dreams, you know what I mean? They've got the characters in there, all the cast are in there. But they're getting better now. It was more leading up to the opening night that I was getting really bad anxiety dreams, like being on a roller coaster because of the emotional roller coaster I go on. But now they're calming down a bit.
Right. So we've had it. So opening night has already enjoyed its opening night.
It has, and it was a great night actually because it was more of a gala night, and because it's about
what does that mean?
So it's like a load of theatre people. So right. Kind of they kind of got it because it's about a theatre family. So
right.
And they kind of got all the kind of moments of madness. Like this character, she's a nightmare. Like she won't. I mean, my character goes totally off piece and won't do the lines in the show and stomps about. And I mean, she's not that likable sometimes, but it's fun to play all those different kind of layers to her.
All right, so we're into the run now. It's a complicated play. Does that mean you can't have fun with it? Because it's or you always have to stay focused, or you can. Now begin to have a bit of fun.
Now I can begin to have fun. In fact, I love it.
What does that mean?
Well, because I love the actors that I'm working with. Like the Ben who plays opposite me. You know, the thing about Ivo van Hove, he wants it to be different every night.
Right.
So Ben will do different things every night. So it keeps it fresh. And so it's always like exciting to go out there and play with all this amazing company.
Does anybody ever? I mean, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but you know when you do the bit outside.
Yeah.
And are you lying down?
Slum. In the street.
Is that Sheridan Smith?
Well, it's right between two pubs as well, so the people are all outside hammered.
That is so funny.
And they all want to come and try and help me. And sometimes I pretend I'm dancing because the tunes are blasting out the club.
That is really punk, isn't it?
It is really punk, that. What's
the most interesting thing that's happened since
Well, we couldn't... The security wouldn't let me go out too far the other night because someone was being arrested and restrained on the floor.
This has got to change.
And I was like, just let me go. It's fine. It doesn't matter. And they were like, no, you can't go too far over that way. So I had to start a little bit closer to the door. But other than that, that's all that's...
No, that's got to change. Come on, security.
Come on, I want them all walking past and joining in, but they won't let that.
How many security guys do you have there?
There's a couple, but Danny is the head of security. And
Nobody messes with Danny.
But he won't let too many people come. But I would love it. I'd love it the more to get involved. But I guess it's a bit dangerous.
All right. What happens afterwards? Do you go straight home or do you treat yourself
straight home
once a week or something like that?
Well, I tell you what, though, the company, we try and do something. Like we went to this darts place the other night, all as a company, just because it's nice. Because it, you know,
how are the arrows?
I don't think I threw a single dart all night. I just talked, but we like going out. And
is that like the putt shack? Because there's a putting place you can go.
Yeah,
with drinks.
It's like place called Flight Club in town. Somewhere.
Flight Club.
Yeah, it's a good fun night out. You guys should go.
The team have got a night out on Friday.
Oh really? It's good Flight to do Club. That, isn't it? You should do it every week with your company. Because
first rule of Flight Club. Don't invite Vassas and Chris. Yeah, we're NFI us two.
Oh, are you?
NFI. Yeah. The young bucks are out on their own.
Oh.
And there's nobody going to stop them.
Well, have fun, guys.
That whole thing.
I might join you.
Oh, Sheridan's invited. Oh, la-di-da. That whole post-theatre Friday, Saturday night, though. You know, when people have been working.
Yeah.
And you go to the bars where all the West End guys. I mean, that is some crack, isn't it? That is a real sort of brother and sisterhood, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I can't do that anymore. Just because I'm getting old and I've got a little three-year-old. Who's listening? Hi, Billy.
Hi, Billy.
He's listening.
Mummy's coming home soon.
But it is. I used to always go out and do those nights, and the younger cast members do. And it is. You're right. It's a camaraderie, isn't it?
Well, listen. It sounds compelling.
You would get it. Totally.
Oh, mate,
I would love you to see it.
I get it already. Opening night at London's Gielgud Theatre. Until Saturday, July 27th, and then you're working again straight after the back of that. You've got a couple of days.
Two days after.
Oh my God. She's very much in demand, this Smithy girl.
Aww.
Tickets available now via openingnightmusical.com. Are you going to see the Amy film?
I'm definitely going to see the Amy film, but it will be heartbreaking, I bet. But
it is. I mean, the first sort of, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 minutes, it's great. It's classic biopic. You know, they're setting her up. It's when she's younger. It's her in a bedroom writing some songs.
Yeah.
And the girl who plays Amy, I mean, she is just off the chain.
Really? Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
But the film really takes off. And this is not to say it's not good beforehand, because it has to, you know, we know, don't we? Because you know better than I do.
Yeah.
You've got to sow the seeds. Great films, you know, really take their time in the first 20, 30, 40 minutes, because they have to.
Yeah.
You know, and it really takes off when she meets Blake in the Good Mixer pub in Camden.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that
so sad,
first meeting of those two, because it's all about her story is very much all about the lost love of her life and love in general, and her mum and dad and her nan, who she loses as well. It's all in the film. But they've nailed this scene where she first meets Blake, because it's so fiery. It's so like
powerful.
What? It jumps and you go, oh.
Oh, my gosh.
It
it was a love like no other, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know, he comes in. He's in the bar. Have you been in the Good Mixer in Camden?
No.
Okay, I used to go in there all the time. It'll be very busy for the next few weeks, let me tell you. It's still there. The pub is still there. The pool table that Amy played on is still there. They won't take it out. And the queue to play on the pool table is ridiculous all the time. Wow. And it's the same pub that they go in Windmill and I.
Oh, my God, I love that film.
Yeah, it's the same pub on the corner of, I think it's Inverness Street in Camden. And she's in the non-pool table side, and then Blake comes in and he's just won a load of money on the horses, and she thinks, who's this firecracker? And then he goes over to the pool table, and then he puts a song on the jukebox, the Shangri-Las, this all girl band, and she's like, and then he mimes, lip syncs perfectly to the Shangri-Las. And it's amazing.
Oh, I've got goosebumps. I have to watch
it. Did you ever meet her?
I knew Amy.
Did you know her very well?
I knew her quite well,
Did you actually?
Yeah, I did.
She came on the show a couple of times, but I didn't know her. But I mean, super talented.
So talented. So, so talented and troubled and just wanting to be loved. Yeah. That's what I got.
And we got Eddie Marsden on.
Oh, he's a brilliant actor.
Who plays her dad.
So he plays her dad. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I will have to watch it.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, if I can bring myself to. Yeah.
Sheridan.
Thank you for having me. I love you, Chris. I love being here. I love you.
We do.
I'm so chuffed that you had me in, and I've got your hat. We've got matching hats.
Yeah, you got the.
I've got the baseball
cap version. Yeah. All right. Can we have another control round of applause for the wonderful
Sharon
Smith?
Thank you, guys.
Opening night, London's Guildhall Theatre, Punk Theatre at its very contemporary best. Openingnightmusical.com for tickets.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Thank you.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on,
let it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Fast us over to you. Who's on next?
He's the award-winning actor who's like a human stamp of quality in basically all the telly and all the films. He now stars in the new Amy Winehouse biopic Back to Black out this Friday. So please welcome, ready, steady, Eddie Marsden.
Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, here he is smiling, beaming like a Cheshire cat. I'm not surprised. I know you're a very happy human being anyway. But the film is brilliant. You saw it in its entirety, in its fullest, finest glory last night, the premiere. What was it like seeing it in that guise for you for the first time? What was the night like? Tell us about the emotion. Mitch was there. You play Mitch, of course, Amy's dad.
Yes, it was a very emotional evening. It's a beautiful tribute to Amy, the film. And the last 10 minutes absolutely broke my heart. And I've read the script. I worked in it for 2 or 3 years. And it just, and the way Sam Taylor Johnson has just moulded the whole thing. She's a real artist. Even the little bird that kind of represents Amy's soul in the film. It's just, it's a beautiful film. And Marisa is amazing.
So you saw the film, a roughish cut?
Before Nick Cave did the music and before he did the final song and before they put that in. And it was very good, but you kind of saw the assembly. And it was a test screening and it got very good scores. But then they go in and they tighten it up. It's like any creative process, really. It's about the final strokes. And I was amazed at what Sam had done with it by the time I saw it.
Wow, so much to talk about. Mitch was there, of course.
Yes.
How much contact did you have with Mitch before the film, during the film, last night?
I had lots of contact with him. He was my main point of reference. I the way I act is I always research things. I'm more of a researcher than an actor, really. So I just asked him a load of questions about where he grew up, where he went to school, where his grandparents lived. I asked him about how he first met Amy's mum, Janice. I asked him to make a playlist of his favourite music. I always do that. Any character I play, they've got to tell me what music they play, what aftershave they wear. And he even sung Fly Me to the Moon for me. He even recorded it, so because I had to copy his voice. It was beautiful. The very interesting thing, when he recorded Fly Me to the Moon to me, at the end of it, he said, "There you go, love you." And when I heard that, it broke my heart. I've got four teenage kids, and every time they leave the house or go to school, I say, "All right, have a nice day, love you." And when he said that to me, I realised his daughter's not there anymore, and he still has that feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
He still has that love, but there's nowhere for it to go.
Yeah, I mean, we all think we know the Amy story, but we really don't.
No.
You know, this film really helps us out, though. It's got to be said. I didn't realise how... I mean... Her dad was always in the picture whenever we saw the headlines.
Yes.
Or whenever we read a story about her. But other dads and mums have been in the picture to do with other famous people, you know, sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes in between. She really did. I mean, he was her hero.
She loved her dad. Yeah. She absolutely adored
him. She loved a mum and a nan. That all comes across.
Yes, she loved.
Well.
She comes from a very loving family, a very loving, supportive family. It's really interesting when someone like Amy dies so young, who's so brilliant and has touched their lives in such a profound way. There's a kind of collective trauma. And we try to make sense of it. And the way we make sense of it is we find someone to blame.
Yeah.
And you blame the dad or you blame the husband. But addiction doesn't need dysfunctionality. We all know addicts who come from the most functional, loving families and people still die of addiction. You know, so she came from a very loving, supportive family, truth be told. But she still died of addiction.
Yeah, because he was like... you are right. I mean, the arrow of blame was often pointed at him because
yes.
he just always seemed to be around. And the sort of subtext was he's trying to steal the limelight. He's trying to manage her. He's trying to dominate her. He's trying to monopolize her. But, you know, there are scenes in the film which I'm sure were true or as close to being true as because I know that Sam wouldn't want to get it wrong.
Yes.
It's just like we've had clips from her talking to us last night on the red carpet about the fact she just kept Amy in mind all the time. Got to be respectful to Amy and her family. Is this what have happened? Is this fair? Blah, 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 blah. And there's a pivotal meeting at the record company when her dad comes to her rescue. More than once, but this was a really important moment.
Yes, and a friend of mine worked at the record company.
Do you want to set the scene, if you don't mind?
Well, in the record company, they go and see it, and they tell her that Frank has done very well the first album, won all these awards, but it's not big enough to go to the States with, and they want her to make another album, and they want her to work on her stagecraft, because she used to play the guitar, and her, kind of, she was very shy, and she hid behind a guitar, and they wanted to get her personality out there. They wanted to get someone else to play the guitar, and Amy took umbrage with that. She was offended by that, and Mitch comes in and says, "Look, I think these blokes know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We should listen to them." He was a very, you know, I mean, he's a, I've got four teenage kids. I love my kids and I make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
Mitch was very honest to me about the mistakes he made, but you can't deny that he loved his daughter.
Yeah. And he was always in his taxi, wasn't he? And it was so funny because she was, you know, she was very rich in the end.
Yeah.
And her estate still is, immensely profitable. But he just always drove his taxi. Did you ask him about that? Because he didn't. I imagine he didn't need to, but he just wanted to. Was it part of his identity? What was that about?
He said he loved London.
Right.
He used to be a double glazing salesman, and then he did the knowledge and became a taxi driver. And he just said, "I just love London," and drove around London. What Amy used to do, because he comes from the East End, Amy used to ask him to put her in a taxi and take him around the East End and tell him all the stories about the Jewish East End and how when he grew up and she used to go around it. Because there's something about Amy; she does look like a bit of a gangster's mole.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Without question.
Yeah.
The Dublin Castle, which is a very famous... Lots of people listening to the show will know about the Dublin Castle, but some won't. It's a very, very famous pub in Camden. The Good Mix is also a very, very famous pub in Camden. Were you at the real pubs for the filming of those scenes?
Yes, we were. Yeah, yeah. They filmed now. I didn't do any scenes there, but we did scenes in Amy's flat, Amy's actual flat. Yeah.
And the house at the end, is that her house?
Yeah, that's the house.
That's off Camden Square,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, that's
the...
Yeah.
I know that.
Where the tree is outside.
I used to live in Camden Village, which is the next road along.
Yeah.
It's so good. Again, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. I think you know, you biopics can go one way or another, can't they? And they can be, sometimes they end up being beige just because they don't want to get things wrong, but to their own detriment. I think this film, honestly, I think it absolutely nails it. As much as we should be allowed to know about her, you know, there's a line there as well. The film really starts to fizz when she's in the Good Mixer. She's on her own. She's having a few pints. She's already got a record deal, and then this geezer walks in called Blake, and he's just had a win on the horses, and he's talking to himself at the bar, and already she you know, takes one to no one. You know, this is a different kind of spirit that's just entered the pub. And then it just takes off. And I didn't realise the kind of charisma that Blake has. And I just didn't understand. Of course, it would have taken somebody so special and so magnetic to garner her attention to the extent it did, a lifelong love affair.
Yeah.
Just speak to that, if you don't mind, Eddie, a bit.
I think the courage of Sam as a director and Matt, the writer, is that they didn't want to go for this binary narrative of both Mitch and Blake being the villains.
Yeah.
What Sam wanted to do with the idea of Blake, she wanted to see why Amy fell in love with him.
Yeah.
Because the film is shot from Amy's perspective. Mm. And as an audience member, I mean, my wife and my daughter said, you know, Jack O'Connell plays such a brilliant role in this. He sings Leader of the Pack.
Yeah.
And the way he sings it, every woman in that cinema thinks, God, I'd fall in love with him.
Yeah.
And that's what you should do, because you should be in Amy's shoes. You're going on Amy's journey, you know. It isn't about demonising these people. You can see why she loved them.
He's on it. He owns it, doesn't he? Yeah. That scene around the pool table.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's so, so good. Other loves of her life, her mum, you mentioned her dad, of course, Mitch, you play Mitch, her nan.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Oh, well, her nan was one of the main reasons why she loves jazz. Her nan used to go out with Ronnie Scott when they were teenagers.
Yeah.
And Ronnie Scott used to invite the family to every time they had a big jazz singer at Ronnie Scott's, they used to get tickets. So the whole family were immersed in jazz. And Amy's nan loved jazz. Mitch loved jazz. And that's why even in the documentary, you see her as a young child with this incredible jazz-like voice. It's because she grew up listening to it.
Yeah.
And her nan was the Lioness. When she had Lioness Records and the album Lioness, it was because of her nan.
And even when she was taking all the wrong things, the substances, there were more jazz substances than other substances.
Yeah, she always says, I'm not rock and roll, I'm not a Spice Girl. She was a jazz singer.
Yeah, the Spice Girl that mentions really early on. That made me chuckle, that did. When she went to America, so she sort of elopes almost with Blake.
Yes.
And there's a scene, I don't know, we can't really give anything away because we know most of the story, so I suppose it's all right. And I don't think it'll ruin anybody's enjoyment of the film. So she's in America, she gets married without telling anybody to Blake.
Yes.
And then she calls her dad.
Yes.
So did you speak to Mitch about that phone call?
I did. I spoke to Mitch about the relationship with Blake and how they could tell that their daughter was in love with him, but they knew that it wasn't, that they were both in a kind of a dysfunctional drug addict
codependent
relationship. Yeah, codependent. So he kind of, you know, but what can you do? You're young, your daughter's in love and she's an adult. There's not much you can do.
Yeah.
The family tried 9 interventions. They tried to get a section and they tried to get help with medical help 9 times.
Yeah.
And no one knew that. Everyone thinks that the one song Rehab means that the family didn't want to help her, and it's not true.
So there is another phone call in the film. There is another moment where she calls her dad and she says, Dad, please send me to rehab, and he can't believe
yes. That was at the point where Blake gets clean in prison, and then she says, Amy always wanted to be a mum, and she's in Bar Italia in Soho, and she sees a little boy, and she decides, Dad, take me to rehab, and he takes her, and she gets clean.
And what's the timeline there, if you don't mind, Eddie?
I don't know.
Ish.
She was 2 years or 3 years sober by the time she died.
Right.
So she was clean of drugs by 2 to 3 years.
Right.
And the way poor Amy died was she had a binge drinking session the night before she died, and her body gave up then.
Because it was so weak.
But it was so weak. But also she'd suffered from other conditions from about the age of 15.
Right.
So she just damaged her body.
What's wonderful about the film is just revisiting her genius.
Yes.
Because we forget. I mean, we play Amy Winehouse all the time on the show, all the time on the station. I put Amy's album on last night, Back to Black, in a bit, you know, not dissimilar to how you did to get me in the mood for today.
Yes.
And making the pasta for the boys last night who are in today. You know, we had Back to Black on. And you go, you're so good. This is so good. Yeah, and Frank was so good as well. But it's we think we remember, but we don't.
No, you don't. Because when you also understand the context behind it, it makes you appreciate it even more, yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah.
And what about the Mark Ronson chapter? When she goes over and she works with Mark Ronson. What did Mitch say about that, about Mark?
Well, that was Ray, really. That was her new manager who got him in.
Right.
But he was a fantastic manager. The friend of mine who worked with Amy at Island Records said that Ray was a brilliant manager.
Where did he come from? Because he appears in that meeting.
Yeah. He was. Well, he was her promoter,
right.
And then became her manager.
Right.
But he was great at taking care of her. He really looked after her. And he introduced her to Mark Ronson. And the way that whole piece where she sings Back to Black and Marisa sings there, and that's real Marisa's voice. It's not Amy's voice, which as an actor I really admire because she's got the courage. She can't stop. She's not going to suddenly play a brilliant part and then start miming. She wants to infuse that.
Which would be weird, wouldn't it?
Which would be weird and fake and not
authentic.
And
you'd lose the audience.
Yeah, you'd lose them 100%. And when she sings Back to Black in the film, that breaks your heart as well.
Now, you're also in something else.
I am, yeah. Okay. I'm always in something else.
Back to Black. I've seen it. Eddie's in it. He's seen it. It's out on Friday. The whole world's going to see it. But you're also in something else on Apple TV Plus. Is it continuing? Is it already on this?
It's coming out on the 12th, same day as Back to Black. It's called Franklin.
All right.
Michael Douglas. Yeah.
All right. Now it stars Michael Douglas as Benjamin Franklin and you as founding father John Adams. No pressure there, Eddie.
No. Well, they actually signed me to play John Adams like 15 years ago.
Right.
And I went and did a screen test. I went and met Tom Hanks in Santa Monica. And then I signed a contract. I went and did a screen test in Virginia. And then they shelved the project. And 6 months later, Paul Giamatti, who was a friend of mine, he got the part and he was brilliant and won Emmys. But the writer remembered me. And when they were doing this, he sent me an email. Said, will you play John Adams now opposite Michael Douglas?
Wow.
So I jumped at the chance.
Hang on a minute. There's so much to it. You just said so many names there. So Tom Hanks, was he producing at the time?
Tom Hanks was producing.
Because he's got his production company, which is named after two streets in Hollywood, I think, isn't it? Something like that. And Paul Giamatti, well, he's great. Did you just say he's a friend of mine?
Yeah, we were doing a film together called The Illusionist.
Oh, wow.
And I said to him, why don't they get you to play the part of John Adam? He said, they'll never get me, Eddie. They're going to get someone like you.
You seen The Holdovers?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Isn't
it
incredible?
It's so good.
God.
It's such a good film.
That's fantastic. I love the bit when the kid says about his eye. Which one am I supposed to look at?
We all
had a teacher at school with a dodgy eye and we never knew which one he was looking at.
Yeah, you never know to say anything or not about it. Have you seen The Holdovers yet?
No.
Oh,
it's a brilliant film.
You still got it to watch. I'm jealous. So Benjamin Franklin, didn't he fit like 10 lifetimes in one, even back then when it was harder to do?
Yes.
Didn't he come over here and live here for a bit?
Yeah, he lived here for a bit and then went back to the US. And
did
then
he go to Paris as well
went to Paris. The whole thing's set in Paris.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Franklin is all set in Paris. It's basically Benjamin Franklin in Paris.
I thought I'd imagine that, but that happened.
Yeah, that did.
And he came, didn't he study at university or something here?
Yeah, he studied because he lived here for a long while because they considered themselves Englishmen before the War of Independence.
Right.
And then he went over to Paris to raise money. The whole story is about raising money from the French to raise money for the colonists for the War of Independence for the Americans, really.
So you played opposite Michael Douglas?
I did play.
You hung out with Michael Douglas?
I did, mate.
He
hung out with me, if I'm fair.
Yeah, what's he like as a hang? What did he think of you as a hang? What was the hang like?
It was great. I mean, Danny Mays is in it.
Danny Mays is one of our favourites.
Yeah, so me and Danny were saying, no matter what scene, you do a scene with Michael Douglas and you're being character and you try and hold the character. And then every time you did a scene, part of you went, oh, my God, it's Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
You can't stop it. But he's lovely. He was so supportive. He's very similar to Tom Hanks in that way. He understands how famous he is. He understands the status he has in the room. And he takes steps to put you at ease.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's lovely
cool.
Like that.
It's cool. Now, Sam Taylor... Is she Sam Taylor Wood now or Sam Taylor?
Sam Taylor Johnson.
Sam Taylor Johnson. So Sam Taylor Johnson, she lived or or maybe still does live very close to Amy's stomping ground,
right,
in Camden.
Right.
Did that? Do you know about that?
Yeah, well, I know that they had Primmy mutual Hill. Friends. Yeah,
and
yeah.
There's that great scene on top of Primrose Hill and all
yeah,
that. Oh
yeah.
God, because I used to live around there, and when they were they make quite a lot of movies, don't they, around there? And they now and again they close up Primrose, and you think, oh, what are they making now? And you know, and then I was there, I was around there. When did you make this film?
Was in the 2023, the beginning of 2023, yeah.
All right, so it's quite a quick turnaround
for
a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking, have I been... Was it closed one day when you were making this? I don't know. And The Good Mixer, I think it's in Inverness Street, which is still there. The pub is still... The pool table is still there.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm sure that's the same pub they use in With Nail and I, isn't it?
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah. Pair of pints. I think that's the phrase we're looking for there. Eddie, what was it like last night during the film? How did it go down? Was there standing out at the end? Because you can get a vibe in the room, can't you?
Oh, there was an amazing vibe in the room.
Yeah.
I mean...
Was it crazy on the red carpet?
Yeah. Yeah.
A mad one.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I've been in this business for 30-odd years now, and you can sense a big film.
Yeah.
But I think the public have kind of an attachment to this narrative of Amy, you know, and they love Amy, and the interest in this film is amazing, really. It's a big movie, but when Nick Cave, he's written a song for Amy at the end when the credits come up, and it just says the end of the film, you're already bereft, and then he plays this song. Oh, it breaks your heart.
Well, it's funny because I couldn't go to a screening, and I really couldn't go last week, and we checked and I couldn't make it work, and the kids and families, everything and this kind of stuff, and I didn't think I was going to get to see it, and then the film company very courteously sent me this link yesterday, and I watched it. And because I'm watching it on the laptop, which I know is not ideal, but it's better than not watching it at all. I'm so glad I did. I'm looking at the how long's left, and I'm thinking, how far do they go here? You know, do they go to the you know, Amy's ultimate end? And I'm thinking, there's not enough time left. And of course, you do.
Yeah.
Because I forgot, it just literally falls off a cliff, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does, yeah.
Because I'm thinking, is it a two-parter? Because I forgot. Do you know what I mean? I hope I'm not being...
No, not at all. Not at all.
You go, oh, yeah, no, because it happens so...
Yeah.
I was thinking, when did she... You know, when did she sort of take a hit again? When did she fall off the wagon? But she didn't fall off the wagon. I mean, ultimately she did because of how she died. But there wasn't this public demise, was there, again?
No.
She was clean. She was successful. She bought this beautiful house.
Yeah. Mitch showed me a photograph of her 2 weeks before she died, and she was the picture of health.
Yeah, she looked it
so
in the movie.
Well. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm not surprised you're all in buckets because of the fact it creeps up on you.
Yeah.
I mean, and we all know it's coming. Oh, wasn't sure in the end, but it is such a shock still, and it always amazes me how brilliant directors, producers, and writers and actors, you know, and the whole company get together and deliver something we know is going to happen, but still shocks us.
Yeah,
that's the genius of it.
Well, I think the reason this works is because it challenges. There's a pervading narrative, and this subtly challenges that narrative.
Yeah.
What this film does, it makes you realise it doesn't make her a victim. You celebrate her brilliance.
Yeah.
And also you have incredible compassion for people with addiction and their family.
Yeah. Did you talk to mum and dad after?
I did. I was so... When I met Janice... I'd never met Janice before, Amy's mum. And when I met Janice, I almost cried when I met her.
I bet you did.
Because although everybody has ownership of Amy, and it's something we all value, actually you forget that she's someone's daughter.
Yeah.
And when you meet the family, they're there, and there's a massive premiere and people taking photographs, and these people are there, and they've lost their daughter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, to me, that I found that quite moving. Yeah.
And how were they?
They were good. We're going to a private screening on Wednesday for the family to spend some time with them privately and watch the film, which I'm really pleased to do. She's lovely. She's an incredible woman, Amy's mum. She's got two degrees. She's a chemist.
Yeah.
She's really intelligent, really bright woman. It's fantastic.
Well, congratulations, Eddie.
Thank you very much.
It's absolutely marvellous. The film is marvellous. Back to Black. It's out this Friday, April the 12th. And if you've got some spare eyeball time, then check out a bit of Franklin as well. Why don't you do that? I'm really interested in that. I think that's amazing. And Apple TV Plus, they're rocking as well. Have you seen The Gentleman?
I have seen The Gentleman.
Okay,
yes.
So is that a tick? Is that a tick for you? You happy with that one?
Well, I'm in the original. I'm in the film.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. I did. I did. I love Ray in it. Ray's fantastic.
Yeah.
And Theo is. I mean, I think Theo looks amazing, doesn't he?
I think it's great. Yeah. I think it's great. What else? Have you seen the final episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which was out yesterday?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen the
you
final
one. You had a busy day
yet.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
I didn't. I've got no excuses, so I didn't see that either. What else? Have you seen Ripley?
Yes, I love Ripley. Ripley's good. Isn't Andrew Scott fantastic, isn't he?
Do you know him?
Yeah, no, I don't know him, but I'm just in awe of him.
Have you seen all 8 episodes then?
Yeah. It's all in black and white. It's all missing.
I've seen 4.
It's beautiful. Beautiful.
It's good at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good for you. Anything else you want to talk about before you go?
No, I'm good.
Back to Blackout this Friday, starring Eddie and the gang. It's an amazing biopic. They've absolutely nailed it. They've come as close as they could do to representing Amy and everything that went on around her without going far enough than would be appropriate or respectful. I think that's about it. Cheers, Eddie. Thank you.
When you want your favourite 80s songs to lift your mood, play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk. I didn't mean to hurt you. I'm a hero. I'm
holding out for a hero till the end of the night. Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.